Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be back with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And we are live from the Auto Farm Studios. I like the sound of that. We're going to be talking a lot of local and national today. We are going to talk more high school football tomorrow here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. The Emory Spartans will take on the Richfield Wildcats. That's a good rematch for Emory to open up the season. It's how the season came to an end last year. Richfield topped Emory 21-7 in the opening round of the state tournament. It was a game that Emory, I thought, outplayed Richfield. Could not score in the red zone and had costly turnovers. That was the difference in the ball game. We are going to talk to Coach Famalo about tomorrow's matchup, and you will be able to listen to the live broadcast beginning at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show, followed by kickoff at 7. So Coach Famalo is going to join us in just a bit. On the national side of things, we'll catch up with a good friend of mine, Antoine Staley. Writes for Athlon Sports, college football insider, also has a vote for the Heisman Trophy. We've talked a lot about the Pac-12. We've talked a lot about the Utah Utes. I want to get Antoine's take on the national scale. Coach's preseason rankings are out. Alabama's number one, Clemson is number two. There are quarterback controversies surrounding both teams. Is that a big deal? Should you worry about that? And as far as, I'm going to say, 7 to 12 goes in the coaches' poll, there's some teams. There's some squads that I think can make a lot of noise and some quarterback controversies there as well. So we will talk college football a little bit later on in the show. Right now, I say we dive into the national sports headlines and take a look at the scores from around Major League Baseball. A couple of finals already today. The Tampa Bay Rays got the best of the New York Yankees earlier. Tanaka takes the loss on the hill, only his fourth loss of the year. The Rays took advantage of the Yankees early, scoring two runs in the first inning, including this RBI by Tommy Pham, the former St. Louis Cardinal.
The 2-1. Here's a swing and a drive down the left field line, giving Chase Robinson to the corner, and it's off the top of the wall. Wendell can walk home. Wendell scores on what will be a double for Pham.
The Yankees having a hard time keeping pace with the Boston Red Sox. They're now at 75 and 46, excuse me, on the season. We take a look at a game that's going on right now. The Mets and the Phillies in a slugfest. If you're a Mets fan, the Mets have posted 15 runs up to this point in time in the game. In the sixth inning, they lead 15-4 over the Phillies. High-scoring affair there. Plenty of action coming up tonight in the 5 o'clock hour. The Chicago Cubs will take on the Pittsburgh Pirates. We get the Nationals and the Cardinals. 5:30, the Rockies and the Braves. Big series. Big series here because the Rockies trying to keep pace with the Diamondbacks, trying to keep pace with the Dodgers. They have a lead right now on the Dodgers. Big series there. John Gray will take the ball for the Rockies. 5:35 tonight, we get game two of the Mets and Phillies. Maybe the way this one's going right now, it's going to be a very a long game because the Mets are lighting up the scoreboard. 6:05 tonight, we get the Angels and the Rangers. 6:10, it's the Tigers and the Twins. The Blue Jays travel to take on the Royals. And we have one nightcap game tonight, the Diamondbacks and the Padres. That's set at 8:15. Now we'll take a look at some of the other headlines, and we'll begin in the NFL. John Elway made a statement today about Colin Kaepernick. It's funny to me that still today, there's a debate on social media, Twitter, Facebook, that Colin Kaepernick has a place in the NFL. The Denver Broncos have tried to decide what they want to do as far as a quarterback goes. And John Elway said that Colin Kaepernick will not be a consideration. Okay, the Broncos demoted Paxton Lynch to number three. Chad Kelly right now is the number two quarterback. I like Chad Kelly. I really do. and then they signed Case Keenum. And I've said this multiple times on the show. I don't believe the Broncos have a starting quarterback to begin with because I'm not big on Case Keenum. Not high on this guy. Elway gave a deposition in May for Colin Kaepernick's lawyers in the collusion case against the NFL. Kaepernick attended the deposition. Elway said he met with Kaepernick twice in 2016, and he offered him a contract, but he didn't sign it.
We offered him a contract. He did take it. You know, and as I said in my deposition, and I don't know if I'm legally able to say this, but he's had his chance to be here. He passed it.
That was John Elway talking about the Kaepernick situation earlier today. That's a different wrinkle, right? I mean, you have John Elway, one of the best general managers in football. I'm fine with saying that. I mean, this guy has built championship contending teams offensively and defensively when you take a look at the juggernaut side of the ball. Said he offered Kaepernick a contract. He didn't want it. Elsewhere in the NFL, we have more preseason football coming. There's some interesting matchups tonight. A rematch of last year's Super Bowl, the Patriots and the Eagles. This one is going down in Foxborough. Nick Foles talked about playing against the New England Patriots once again.
Pretty familiar with the opponent. You know, obviously, you know, it's a new season, some new personnel. You know, everyone's installing different things at different times. So, you know, it'll be fun just to be back on the field. Obviously, it's the last team we played, but just be excited to go up there and compete against them.
Two other contests tonight. The Pittsburgh Steelers on the road to take on the Green Bay Packers. Mike McCarthy says he will play all four quarterbacks for the Packers on the roster right now in tonight's contest. That one is scheduled for a 6 p.m. start. Tonight on ESPN, the nationally televised game, the Washington Redskins play host to the New York Jets. No word yet on if Alex Smith will play. Jay Gruden holding his cards close to his vest. Alex Smith says he wants to play, but it's not his decision.
There's a lot that goes into those decisions. Luckily, I don't have to make them. As a player, you just get ready to play. And for me to get ready to play, it is a little weird. You've come out here and you practice against them 3 days, kind of going at each other, giving everything you got. And then you get back into preseason mode where there is a little bit of, hey, maybe we're not running this. Hey, maybe we're not running that in preseason type of deal. I think everybody hopes to play. I know I do.
Again, start time for that game is set for 6 p.m. It'll be on ESPN. Some other news out of the NFL. Dez Bryant and the Cleveland Browns. This seems like a match made in heaven because the Browns are really lacking from a depth perspective at the wide receiver spot. We know there's no Josh Gordon. They traded Corey Coleman. There's some issues with the particular rookie that they brought in. It just makes sense. And I still, for the life of me, cannot understand why pundits continue to bring up what the locker room in Cleveland would look like. This team has won one out of the last 32 freaking games. There's no possible way that Dez Bryant could affect that locker room. It's not possible. Bryant said that he likes the city. He would like to play for the Cleveland Browns. Says he would look good in orange. Remember, he played at Oklahoma State. He said they're just trying to work some things out. He retweeted a photo of himself signing some autographs at a Cleveland airport. Several Browns have said they want Dez Bryant on the squad. Tyrod Taylor, who I think is a very underrated quarterback. Baker Mayfield looks to be the part. Looks the part well. Looked good in the first preseason game. And Jarvis Landry, who you know is dying for some help. He doesn't want to play on a 1-32 team, a 1-15, 0-16 team. This is a guy that wants to play competitive football, and he believes that Dez Bryant would definitely help him out. That's the story coming out of Cleveland. Remember, Dez turned down a 3-year contract to play for the Ravens not that long ago. Wants a 1-year deal, wants an attempt to reestablish himself because he believes he's still one of the top wideouts in the game. Don't think so. 1-year deal in Cleveland makes a lot of sense, though. That's a quick look at what's happening on the national sports front. We're going to break for just a moment. Your local sports recap is coming up. And again, on the show today, we'll talk with Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartan football team and some college football talk coming up with Antoine Staley. It is a Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports from the Auto Farm Studios here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin on the high school golf course, where yesterday the Carbon Dinos dominated the competition by finishing with a team score of 295, easily defeating the second-place Delta Rabbits, who finished with a 332. The Dinos were led by Brady Gagan, Carson Martinez, and Nick Olson, who all shot a 72. Caden Slavinsky registered the fourth score with a 79. Jordan Penevich shot an 85, and Tyler Yakovich finished with an 86. Delta, again in second, finished with a 332. Union finished in third with a 339. The field dipped after that. Juab shot a 348, followed by Providence Hall's 350. ALA was in last at 408. Now, the standout performance for the Carbon Dinos give them a hefty lead, as they are now up by over 35 strokes going into the third week of the season. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will catch up with head coach Brett Johnson in the coming days to talk about the standout performance and about the squad as they continue to move forward. We stick with high school golf, but we move over to Emory High. And yesterday, the Spartans played host to their one and only home meet of the season at Millsite, and they delivered a fourth-place finish. Oakley Toomer delivered a season-low 75 score. Shaden Kilpack was right behind with an 83. Taylor Lindsay donated a 94, and Logan Healy recorded the team's fourth score with a 98. As a squad, Emory shot a 350, putting them one stroke better than South Sevier and 13 strokes behind third-place Manti. Grand and Richfield went 1-2. Emory again improved by 10 strokes this week, and again it was Oakley Toomer and Shaden Kilpack leading the way. The Spartans will take the remainder of the week off, but return to the golf course next week. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio for more on both Carbon and Emory golf squads. Now we stick with high school sports, but we move over to soccer. And on Tuesday, the Carbon Lady Dinos scored their first victory of the season as they defeated the Gunnison Bulldogs 2-0 at home. Grace Broadbear and Molly Banks each found the back of the net once to record the only two goals of the contest. Goalie Ronnie Williams logged the shutout as Carbon improved to 1-1. Tuesday's win comes following a 9-3 loss to the Richfield Wildcats in the season opener. That was back on Thursday, August 9th. With only one region tilt remaining on the schedule, the Lady Dinos will open up the Region 14 portion of the schedule on August 22nd against Union. The first home contest will take place 2 days later against Providence Hall. Now we stick with girls soccer, but we move over to Emory High, and the Lady Spartans used a dominating performance on Tuesday afternoon to top the Payson Lions 3-0. Entering the contest 1-1 on the season, Emory opened a 1-0 lead entering the break, and the second half played out in similar fashion as the Lady Spartans added two more goals and managed to keep Payson off of the scoreboard. Alexis Winter, Morgan Herdsman, and Cindy Stilson all scored one goal. Carrie Cook recorded her first shutout of the year at goalie, helping the team bounce back from a 4-1 loss to Ben Lohman on Friday. Now, Tuesday's win is the only contest of the week for Emory. That'll give the team a full week off before returning to the field. With only two non-league tilts remaining before the region opener, the Lady Spartans will travel to Beaver on August 21st. Now we take a look at the weekly schedule, the remaining schedule for the two squads. And tonight, the Carbon Lady Dino Volleyball Squad will open up the season with the annual Blue and White scrimmage game, which is scheduled to start at 6:30 p.m. Following tonight, the girls' soccer squad will return to the field tomorrow to take on South Summit, and the football team will open up the season tomorrow against Manti. We'll preview those contests tomorrow during the local sports news. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You watch the games. You follow the team. You wear the colors with pride. And you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
Thursday edition of the Coach's Corner, live from the Auto Farm Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're going to talk more high school football. Yesterday, Coach Josh Huntsman gearing up for Carbon's contest tomorrow against the Manti Templars. Today, we are going to talk Emory High School football. The Spartans entering year three under head coach John Famalo will play host to the Richfield Wildcats right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. And Coach Famalo is joining us right now over the phone. Coach, a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate you having me on, Jordan.
Definitely, Coach. It's go time. There's no more abstract talk. There's no more, you know, off-season workout talk. It is seriously go time for these boys. You guys have been working hard, I know, over the last few months. And now the season opener against Richfield, it's a day away.
Yeah, I mean, it got here pretty quick, and so I'm getting excited for it, and it's say we've done put in the work, and so we'll see what comes out of it come Friday. So, yeah, we're excited and ready to go.
When you say put in the work, Coach, are you happy with what you've seen from this team over the last 3 weeks? I know it's different than the off season itself, but of the 3 weeks that you guys get to practice, are you happy?
Yeah, honestly, I am. I mean, you're not ever satisfied as a coach where you want to be, especially coming on game week. But so far as the work ethic of the kids and, you know, getting them prepared that way, you know, I feel good about where we're at, probably ahead of where we were last year based off of, you know, the offense that we put in last year. And now we got another, you know, we got a year under our belt that way. And so feel a lot more confident that way about where we are offensively and defensively. We've been, you know, kind of same with the same system. So so far as that, I feel pretty good. But there's always things you want to get implemented and get better at. And so that's just, we'll have to work through that as the season goes on.
Coach, as I go back and I examine 2017, it's so hard to gauge at where you guys are at offensively because of the changes that we've seen over the last 3 years. But, I mean, it is safe to say that you guys are a spread offense team. There's no more implementation of the spread offense. I mean, from what I can gauge, especially watching you guys practice, I mean, this is viewed as a full-on spread offense.
Yeah, we've obviously transitioned to that point. I think it's a little easier offense for our offensive line, and but it puts a lot of pressure on a quarterback. And but at the same time, I think it allows us to use the weapons we have as far as the kids and the skill level that they have to be able to use them in the best ability we can. So that's kind of the reason of transitioning that way. And, you know, like I say, another year under our belt that way, it's just, you know, hopefully we'll progress and get better at it.
I had an opportunity to talk to Kyson Stilson earlier in the week, and one of the things I appreciate so much about Kyson is he gives you honest answers when you interview him. Talking about last season, you know, he said a lot of that goes on me. Some of the losses that we had deep into the season, you know, one possession losses, a lot of that's on me. He also talked about accountability of his offensive line in this spread offense, and when he puts the ball in the vicinity of a receiver, they better catch it. I mean, it's kind of a fluid situation, I know, but to see a senior quarterback take responsibility for losses, Coach, I really appreciate that, and I'm sure you do as well from a leader standpoint.
Yeah, I do. I mean, again, as we reviewed, you know, last season, that's what we talked about a ton, as, you know, we were, you know, half a dozen plays away from, you know, a win or a loss. And so I appreciate him. Again, doesn't necessarily all fall on him, but I feel, you know, it's nice to hear him want to take accountability. And that's what we're trying to teach these kids, accountability of your position and what you're trying to do and being able to answer that. And so that does mean a lot to me that he feels like, hey, I need to step up and be better. And, you know, it makes a difference in a win and a loss.
Yeah, we talk about the pressure of a quarterback, and we can talk about the pressure of Rance Jensen and what he's going to have to carry offensively. But, Coach, when you have such a lack of senior leadership on the team because you don't have seniors, and we look at what you have in the trenches, it seems like a lot of it is going to fall on Jesse Barnett, who was a standout player last year on both sides of the football. I think that's something that gets I guess it's an underrated aspect of football. You know, we talk about the quarterback leadership, we talk about the skill positions, but when you lack that up front and you have one kid who is such a big contributor, I guess a lot of that pressure falls on him as well.
Yeah, it does. Between him and Ashton Rowley, again, Ashton's a senior, but he's a little bit of a quiet leader, where Jesse's a little bit more vocal kid on the line. And, you know, and so between those two, they're going to be our anchors on that offensive line. You know, I possibly have a sophomore on that line and, you know, a couple juniors. You know, that's Jesse, he understands. He's bought into, you know, he's a kid that's transitioned from a running back now to the offensive line and the defensive line, from a linebacker to the defensive line. And so a kid that's bought in wholeheartedly as what he needs to do to make our team succeed and where he needs to play. And so it's been awesome to see him transition into a leader that way, especially on our line where we need him.
I think the camaraderie is obvious with this squad. That's something that stood out to me in practice. I mean, when you look at the kids, they all seem to enjoy being around one another.
No, that's been the awesome thing about this group, honestly. They all get along. The atmosphere in practice has been really good as far as the kids' attitude about wanting to work hard and, you know, have kids, you know, feeling like they can rest or take it off. They're pushing each other. And so, you know, practice has been great that way for kids being able to push themselves and trying to get better, especially when you got young kids trying to push to get varsity spots. I think that helps that attitude of those older kids needing to know, hey, I got to continue to work hard.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach John Famala with the Emory High School football team. Coach, let's talk about Friday night's opponent. It is Richfield. Every time I've talked to you, I've brought up the fact the conversation that this is how the season ended against Richfield. A little bit different this year. They have a first-year head coach, a guy that took over a program fairly late into the offseason, and I really don't know what to expect from Richfield tomorrow night.
We don't either. Again, it's going to be one of those mysteries. We'll certainly find out. Certainly, you can read reviews. You know, they're supposed to run the spread, carry over a lot of their coaching staff from the prior head coach. And so, defensively, maybe you get the same fronts on that 4-3. And so, you know, preparing for that makes it a little bit tougher. But at the same time, you can't make football too difficult. Again, we know what we're running on our offensive side, and they know rules. On the defensive side, it's, you know, again, don't make it too difficult. If we get aligned in the right spots, and, you know, now you need to just go tackle the person. Yeah, I mean, you just got to make plays. And so kids got to understand that, I mean, no matter what offense is coming at you, you got to continue to get aligned right and make your right reads, and you should be just fine.
You say you don't want to make football too difficult, and I'm sure this is a real simplistic way of looking at it, but when I do look at Richfield and I go back and I review some of the stuff from last year, to me it's pretty simple. Offensively, if you stop Richfield, you got to make sure that Emmett Hafen is just kept in place. To me, he's probably the best athlete that we will see in 3A, and he's going to be under center for Richfield tomorrow night. I mean, to me, offensively, there's really no secret. I mean, if you can contain this kid, you have a pretty good chance against Richfield.
No, and that's it. That's what we talked about a ton this week is, you know, he's certainly a dual threat quarterback. And again, when he sits back in the pocket and you give him time, he'll pick you apart. And when you get pressure on him, you need to make sure you keep him in the pocket. If not, he'll scramble and use his legs and make plays. And so, you know, he's a kid that we certainly have in our game plan to make sure we try to keep under control. Because like I say, we can keep him under wraps. That will hopefully help us to control the ball game and you know, put it in our favor.
You have a couple of game films to look at when, you know, dissecting how you approach this game with Richfield defensively, Coach. And when I go back and I look at Emmett Hafen scrambling in the pocket, to me at times, he tried to do a little too much with his feet. Now, I'm sure, again, we're talking about a kid that's got another year under his belt, but it seemed like to me he got in trouble when his offensive line didn't know where he was at, and that's doing too much with his feet. That's difficult to game plan, though, from a defensive standpoint. How do you approach that, and is that a fair assessment?
No, that is. I mean, he's a kid that can, again, at times he can get himself in trouble for the fact that he's trying to do a little too much. And that's what we have to try to get him into that point where, again, we force him to make mistakes because he's a kid that uses his legs really well to get outside the pocket and he throws well on the run. And so, again, for us defensively, the biggest key is we've got to keep him contained. Once he gets outside and he can freelance, that's when he becomes dangerous. But if you can keep him inside and then make him try to do a little bit too much and then you get a little bit of help, I think that's where you can kind of control him and then hopefully he'll make a mistake. And whether it's an interception or take a deep sack, I think that's where you can kind of game plan to make sure you keep him under control and take advantage of what he's trying to do.
We talk offense, we talk defense, Coach, but one of the things that stands out to me, especially in the black and gold game and talking to some of the other people around the program, I think this is kind of the consensus thought. I always look at the special teams in any high school football game we go into and who has a legitimate kicker, because a kicker in high school football makes all the world of a difference. It doesn't matter if it's a punter or if it's a place kicker. I don't know that there's a better kicker in the 3A classification than Brock Winter.
No, Brock's he's got a great leg. Again, you know, one thing that in the black and gold game, he missed a few kicks. And so as a coach, it's one of those you got to step back and say, hey, Brock, you're overthinking things. And, you know, I think kickers sometimes do that. It's, you know, because in practice, you'll hit 40 yarders, 45 yarders, and without a blink of an eye. And so transitioning that to the game, that's where we got to get him a little bit more consistent. But so far as his leg, you know, I'm confident in what he can do and put it through the uprights.
As far as kicking the ball, kicking off, I don't see too many instances, Coach, where we could see returns this year. I mean, is that fair as well? I mean, this kid has the ability to kick it into the end zone every time.
Yeah, no, and that's what we're hoping. I mean, if we can get a team to start on the 20, that helps us defensively to be able to stay on top of it. Whereas if, again, you get some run backs and we got a lot of young kids playing on the special teams, you know. But, you know, Brock's worked hard this summer, and, you know, I've seen him increase that distance in his kickoffs. And so that's what our game plan, our hope is that we'll get touchbacks every single kickoff and starting to get positioned defensively.
Everybody wants to win every game, Coach. I know you want to win every game, but these first 4 weeks, they don't count towards that region record. And, of course, the region format, as far as the playoffs go, it's the same format as last year where everybody's going to get a chance in the playoffs, 1 through 6. Everybody gets a chance at least one game. What are the four things that you look for, or I shouldn't say four things, but what are the things you look for the most out of the first four games this year with a younger group?
The biggest thing is progression. I mean, so far as getting better. Again, like you say, wins and losses. Certainly, any win you can get helps build confidence. But so far as using a lot of young kids, I need to help build them confidence in what they're doing and being able to compete at a varsity level. So that's the number one thing is I need kids who want to compete and get better these next four games. And then hopefully you see progression on both sides of the ball, that we're getting better, that we're identifying things a little easier, and the game becomes easier for those kids. Those are the two things I'd like to take out of this preseason is that, hey, we're competing, that we're getting better, and, hopefully at the end those equate to wins.
Coach, it's always so much fun to get you on and talk about the team. I'm glad now that we actually have some X's and O's and some meat and potatoes to talk about as far as the football scene goes. Any injuries going into week one that we should be aware of?
We're missing Braxton Young, a junior that played for us a little bit last year, and we were kind of hoping to use him a lot on the defensive side. So he'll probably miss the first game, but besides that, I feel pretty fortunate about no injuries in the black and gold game, any of the camps that we went to, and so we're relatively healthy, and I think the kids are ready to hit somebody else besides themselves.
Looking forward to it, Coach. Thank you very much for the time, and best of luck against Richfield.
Hey, thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartan football team, taking out the time to preview tomorrow's action. We have plenty more high school football talk coming up in the next couple of days. Plenty more football talk coming up here on the show. In fact, we've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to talk to Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports. We'll talk some college football. It's coming up next right here on Drive Time Sports.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Listen, you must... say it again? Buscarini? All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens, where you're right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down!
Price, Utah.
Now!
Me and my man, Trav. Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We've been talking a lot of football over the last 3 to 4 days. Talked a lot of NFL, a lot of high school football as well, with that kicking off this Friday here in the state of Utah. We can't forget about college football. It's definitely my favorite sport, I think, in all. And, of course, right here on KOAL, you'll be able to follow the Utah Utes all season long, as you have for the last couple of decades. Joining us right now to talk a little bit about some of the other storylines outside of the Pac-12 and the Utah Ute realm, we have Antoine Staley, college football writer for Athlon Sports. Antoine, it's always a pleasure to get you on to talk college football. I know we had you on a couple of weeks ago with the Urban Meyer situation. Now that that's kind of settled down a little bit, we could talk about other topics in football. So I appreciate you taking out the time today.
Yeah, sure. Anytime.
I mentioned Urban Meyer, and you came on a couple of weeks ago. It's been kind of quiet on that front over the last, week and a half, hasn't it?
Yeah, it seems like with the investigation going on, I don't know if we'll find anything out. I know they said it's going to take a few weeks, but yeah, I think they're doing their due diligence and just trying to figure out who's to blame and see if Urban Meyer is simply at fault for what happened.
Well, let's talk about the preseason rankings that have come out the coaches' poll, however. We know we have 1 through 25 in the coaches' poll. Haven't got your perspective or your thoughts on this yet. 1 through 5, I don't think there's any surprises. Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Ohio State 3, Georgia 4, Oklahoma 5. That was fairly easy to predict. Maybe Washington could have been in the top 5, but I think for the most part, the top 5, 6 teams in the country going into the regular season, Antoine, it was pretty easy to predict that.
Yeah, really the polls are kind of based off this year and projections. So, yeah, I don't think it's any surprise the way that it went down. You knew Alabama and Clemson were going to be number one and number two because they're favorites not only to get back to the college football playoff, but also to probably play each other in the championship once again. It wasn't a surprise to me at all.
Let's talk about Alabama here for a moment because they've been in the headlines for a different reason, something that isn't, I guess, normal with this Alabama team. If we talk about the quarterback controversy or the quarterback situation, Jalen Hurts, who was the original starter before Tua came in and was fantastic in the national championship game, and we knew that Tua was going to be one of those special talents, but Hurts was a little critical of the quarterback situation and the handling of it in Alabama. They are the number one team in the country. In my opinion, they have the most talent, hands down. But is this a detriment to the team? Is this something to watch, something that could bring the squad down a notch?
It is definitely something to watch because you have an individual who was the starter last year and did a pretty decent job for them. And then in the back of a lot of people's mind, you always knew that Tua was going to come in at some point, not necessarily in the national championship, but maybe this year. And, yeah, he ended up coming in, relieving Jalen Hurts in the national championship. And now Hurts feels like that he was kind of feel lied to and betrayed to by Nick Saban and the coaching staff. I don't think it's no surprise that this situation is going to happen. We knew something was going to transpire because you got a guy that ended up starting that many games and what happened in the national championship. But I'm really surprised he didn't think about transfer because I really thought that he was going to be the backup going into the season, and I think a lot of people felt the same way.
As far as that quarterback situation goes, Jalen Hurts, you said he was admirable last year, but there were obvious flaws in his game. And I think, again, going back to Tua and coming into the season, everybody knew that Alabama had two quarterbacks on this team. Does the old saying really matter? If you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any? Or is that for a mediocre team? Because really, Antoine, we know that Alabama is bringing in 5- and 4-star athletes pretty much at every single position, including the quarterback spot.
I think this situation is different because they're recruiting so well that they got a guy that in Hurts, who's a legit starter, and he's a legitimate starter, and he definitely is somebody that can play on a lot of different teams. But in this case, he's got a guy that's going to play in the NFL.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Alabama's number one team in the country. They have a quarterback controversy. We can talk about Clemson. Do they have a quarterback controversy? Because Kelly Bryant led him to an ACC championship in the college football playoffs last season. I like Clemson a lot throughout the year, but Trevor Lawrence has a legitimate chance, and this is a kid that's a dual-threat quarterback. So there may be a quarterback controversy brewing in Clemson as well, which is odd. The top two teams in the country, two possible quarterback controversies.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have when you're recruiting so well. You're getting stacked at every position, including the quarterback position. And Kelly Bryant, I think he's going to be the starter at least right away. But yeah, you got somebody pushing him as well. But yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. I don't think it's as much of a quarterback controversy as it is at Alabama. Alabama's situation is very unique, where you got a team that won the national championship, but you got some people that are not necessarily happy. Of course, Hurts being one of them, but yeah, I think Bryant probably will be the starter initially. And if something were to happen with Clemson, if they lose a game or Bryant is ineffective, then he might end up getting replaced. But right now, I definitely think he's going to be the starter going into their opener.
Again, we're being joined right now by Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports as we talk college football. Antoine, we were talking 1 through 6 and the coaches pull and some of the controversies there. If we go 7 through 11, there's some really interesting squads here, and we talked to Phil Still about this a couple of weeks ago. Wisconsin, Miami, Penn State, Auburn, and Notre Dame. Out of those teams that I just mentioned, there is no reason to believe that any of those squads from 7 to 11 could crash the college football playoff. I think it's a very deep top 15 this year when we look at teams 1 through 15. But 7 to 11 in the coaches poll, it's pretty packed.
Yeah, it definitely is. You got a lot of teams. Penn State is an interesting team to watch, especially considering what's going on in the Big Ten and Ohio State. And they play in such a tough division. They're there with not only Ohio State, Michigan State, who I think is very intriguing as well. to be completely honest, I think they're a team that a lot of people are kind of sleeping on, just based on the fact that you have teams like Ohio State and Michigan in the same division. But yeah, I think they're going to be just in Miami because they won the ACC Coastal last year and end up winning 10 games, but end up losing their last three, including the bowl game. And a lot of people think that they have a lot of talent coming back, and they could possibly get to the ACC championship once again, and possibly, if they were to upset Clemson, crash that college football party.
We don't want to jump too far ahead, but speaking of teams 7 through 11, one of the biggest matchups, if not the biggest matchup, to start off the college football year, it's Notre Dame and Michigan on September 1st. We had this conversation again with Phil Stowe. I think I've had this conversation with you as well. Notre Dame's an interesting team because they have the talent. I believe 17 returners in all from last season, 17 returning starters. Quarterback scenario, Brandon Wimbush is a kid that I was very high on. Even when he had originally committed to Penn State, I thought this kid was the real deal. At times last year, he looked very good. Later on in the season, there was definitely some... He digressed a little bit, let's be honest. He's going up against Shea Patterson for Michigan, week one. This is a kid that many would project to be the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. I've seen mock drafts that have him anywhere from 1 to 5. That's a great matchup to start off this season with two teams on opposite ends of the spectrum as far as identity goes, but at the same time, two coaches, let's be honest, that could definitely be on the hot seat, and at the same time, two storied programs on September 1st.
Yeah, and a big-time rivalry as well. So, yeah, I think it's definitely going to be an intriguing matchup, arguably the best matchup in week one, at least definitely one of them. You look at Miami, LSU, also Virginia Tech, Florida State. Yeah, I definitely think Michigan, Notre Dame is definitely an intriguing matchup and also a night game. So, yeah. I think it's definitely one of the better matchups we have in week one. And as you alluded to, I think both coaches have kind of taken some heat for different reasons. Obviously, Jim Harbaugh has not beaten his rivals. They don't beat Michigan State one time, has never beaten Ohio State. And you need to, that's what you need to do if you're going to be the head coach of Michigan going forward.
Let's talk about Shea Patterson for a second. Here's a kid that's 6'2", 200 pounds. He's a pro-style quarterback. Again, a lot of people would project him to be a top five pick in the upcoming NFL draft. What do you know about Shea Patterson, and what stands out to you about this kid? And does Harbaugh finally have his quarterback in Michigan?
I think so. You got a guy that played at Ole Miss, played effectively at Ole Miss, was one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC, and ended up coming over from the Rebels. And now you go from that situation where it was kind of toxic, especially with Hugh Freeze in that situation, and now you come over to Michigan with a team that has a chance to possibly compete for the college football playoff, depending on who you're at, so at least the Big Ten championship. And, yeah, and this is a critical year for Jim Harbaugh. He like you say, he finally got a guy that he can rely on, a quarterback. Hopefully their offense is a lot better. I know they don't lose a lot of starters last year defensively, and they feel like they have a lot of good players coming back, and this could be the year, depending on what happens with the Urban Meyer and Ohio State situation, that they might be able to beat Ohio State finally and maybe Michigan State and win the Big Ten championship.
I've said this multiple times. My biggest problem with Harbaugh in Michigan is he hasn't had an offensive identity. He also hasn't had a quarterback that plays to the standard of Shea Patterson, or at least that has the expectations of Shea Patterson. That's why Michigan, for me, is a very interesting team this year. Antoine, if we go 16 through 25, TCU, Va Tech, Mississippi State, Florida State, West Virginia, Texas, Boise State, Central Florida, LSU, and Oklahoma State. That's about 11 teams right there. Which one interests you the most as far as someone that could crash the playoff that maybe nobody is talking about right now?
I like Florida State. I think I know they had a down year under Jimbo Fisher last year, but they end up having brand new coach in there. I think they have a really good opportunity to get Francois back. They also have a interesting quarterback situation there with James Blackman and also DeAndre Francois. You got Cam Akins coming back at the running back position and a run over 1,000 yards. They're stacked. They're really loaded. It's just the fact that they end up having a really bad season last year. But I think Willie Taggart has a lot of talent there. They could definitely win 10 games. They get Clemson in Tallahassee. That's something a lot of people aren't talking about, and they were to win that game. I mean, who knows? All bets are off. They possibly could crash that party if they end up beating Clemson and they get Miami in Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. But that's never really a true home game for Miami, as a lot of Florida State fans attend that game each year.
You know, it's funny, you bring up Willie Taggart, and we're talking about a coach who has now been with three programs in 3 years. It's been a step up every single year. That's why this team, for me, again, we're talking about interesting squads. That's why it's interesting here. You have one coach that has moved in three consecutive years and now is at a program that comes with national prestige. That doesn't happen every day. It's a unique situation, to say the least.
Yeah, it is. He coached down in South Florida for many years. He has somebody that knows the area well. Recruiting down there with the Bulls, went to Oregon for a year, which is a great job. But he's had his heart turned down Florida State, even when you're in a situation like Oregon, when you have a countless amount of resources and money. But Florida State is a great job, one of the best jobs in America. You're in a talent-rich recruiting state, unlike you were in Florida, unlike you were in Oregon, where you get a lot of your recruits from California and Texas. So I think it's a great situation for him, and yeah, he's going to have to handle the expectation of competing for a national championship each year. And I think he, for what I've seen and what I've heard, he's definitely ready for it. And I definitely think that anything below 9-10 wins for Florida State this year would definitely be disappointment.
You know what else doesn't, I guess, bodes against him? Bobby Bowden was a legend. Jimbo Fisher was there to replace Bobby Bowden. Jimbo Fisher won a national championship and would be considered a top 10 coach in the country, hands down. It's not as if Willie Taggart's taking over a program that has been down, a nationally known, you know, with prestige program that's been down. He's taking over a program that won a national championship not that long ago, that had a Heisman Trophy winner not that long ago, has somebody like DeAndre Francois, who I personally love. He was my pick to win the Heisman last season. It's just different than what we typically see for these big programs, the situation that Taggart's in.
Yeah, definitely. And, yeah, he's something that he's not faced yet. And now you got a really such a year with a great program like Florida State, and you got a lot of talent there. Even if he chose not to go with James Blackman, who came in and did, I think, as good of a job he could as a true freshman, weighing 170 pounds. And, yeah, I thought he handled it as well as he could, and now he could possibly be the starter for Florida State. We'll see who they play against Virginia Tech. But, yeah, I think that game in general is going to be interesting for both teams and set the trend for both of them, because I think both teams have a shot to win 10-plus games, especially Virginia Tech, who end up getting Miami at home in Blacksburg in November.
Antoine Staley, again, college football writer for Athlon Sports. Antoine, before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find your work.
You can find me at Athlon Sports. Also pick up the Athlon Sports magazine, College Football Preview magazine, and you can find me on Twitter at Antoine Staley.
Antoine, it's great stuff as always. I really appreciate the time. Thank you very much. I know we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan.
Again, Antoine Staley taking out the time to join us to talk some college football. We're not that far off. The Utah Utes are going to be making their return in about 2 weeks. 2 weeks right here on KOL. They will take on Weber State. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more coming up from the Auto Forum Studio here on KOL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. It's a Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports.
Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year.
It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! Good! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarino on KOAL 750 AM.
Back to close out this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm going to bring in Travis Anderson for the last couple of minutes. Travis, you and Dave Hokanson have been playing host to Drive Time Sports NFL on Saturday. You guys are going to have plenty to talk about. I know tonight you've got to be excited. Part two for Sam Darnold. Out of all the rookies that impressed in week one of the preseason, to me there was Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield. I thought that they were heads and tails above everyone else. Here's the thing about the hyperbole in preseason. You do it once, it can happen. You're going up against twos and threes. Sam Darnold took the majority of the first team reps throughout the week in New York. You say he's going to be the starting quarterback. Week two and week three in the preseason, I think it's a telling point.
He'll play the first half tonight against the Redskins, and during the week they had a joint practice against Washington. And in 2 days he threw 43 passes, and in those 43 passes he had zero interceptions. So Sam Darnold's a guy who is the real deal, and for the New York Jets, it makes so much sense just to start him in week one.
It is the most interesting storyline of the games tonight. Yeah, we get the Patriots and the Eagles. Don't really care about preseason for those two teams. We know what we're going to get. The Redskins, we don't know if Alex Smith is going to play tonight. I want to see Alex Smith in a Redskin uniform. I really hope that this is something that comes to fruition tonight. I think it really adds to this game if we get to see Alex Smith in a Redskins jersey tonight.
Yeah, we need to see what Alex Smith has, especially for Washington, who I believe got better at the quarterback position with Alex Smith.
Better than Kirk Cousins.
I do. I think Alex Smith is a better fit for Washington than Kirk Cousins was.
Just about out of time on this edition of the show. I have to remind you that tomorrow it's a very big day for us. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, high school football makes its return. The Emory Spartans will play host to the Richfield Wildcats. You'll be in the booth tomorrow night with Sonny Buscarini and Emory for the Richfield-Emory game. I know you've been doing your research. What do you think of this game?
This game's going to be back and forth. It's going to come down to the fourth quarter. I believe that both these teams are pretty evenly matched. Richfield has a veteran team. They got some guys coming back. I know their quarterback's coming back. So
he's
running
a stud.
Back.
Emmett Aiken's a stud.
Yeah, so I expect this game to be 28-24, 28-21, somewhere in that area.
And we'll have the live play-by-play call tomorrow night on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Myself and Vinny Rondinelli for Carbon and Manti. We'll talk about both of those games tomorrow. I want to thank Coach John Famalo for taking out the time to join us. And, of course, Antoine Staley. On the show tomorrow, we are going to talk USU Eastern. And we'll talk some local sports on top of that, some local high school sports as well. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.